entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Oh, it is indeed. Hello there, and a good Sunday morning to you. On this 29th day of the month of March, Rich Kimble and Carrie Haskell here for the best of Downtown, brought to you today and every weekday from 4 to 6 p.m. by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. On the program this morning, we talk with our friend, actor and Beatles blogger Mark Cartier. We catch up with Christopher Price of the Boston Globe and talk a little Patriots. And Emmy Award-winning producer Steve Burns will talk with us about a new documentary called Pompeii Disaster Street. But first, though, obviously the big story here and around the world, coronavirus, and the changes that it has brought upon society here and everywhere else for that matter. One of the first communities to be affected by it in the United States was New Rochelle, New York, as they were essentially locked down a couple of weeks ago before anybody else. A friend of Downtown, author Amy Bass, lives in New Rochelle. She wrote about it in a recent edition of Forward, and she shared with us what might be a preview of what's ahead for other places around the country. Here's Amy Bass on Downtown.
Hi there. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we're doing as well as we can, given the situation. How about you?
We're no longer special. I live in New Rochelle, New York, so we were special for a while, and now everyone else seems to be catching up to us, and so I'm not dealing with the heat of the epicenter kind of headline anymore.
No, but you wrote a wonderful piece on Forward.com, Notes from the Future, about what it was like in New Rochelle. What were those early days like when you realized, for better or worse, that you were ahead of the curve?
I think the early days, I think we were all sort of in the same place where we were just being told, like, hey, wash your hands, don't touch your face, it's fine. And I think that we've learned a lot since then. But I think that, you know, we saw my daughter's school was one of the first schools closed on the East Coast, not because there was any diagnosis or infection there, but because it was in what the governor called the containment zone, which was a circle that he drew in our city that paid geographic sense sort of to the outbreak, but didn't necessarily make community sense in terms of who goes to what school and how our community moves. You know, so our kids have been home longer than most other parts of the country. Homeschooling has been going on longer. As a college professor, I am now converting my courses online and dealing with my own students. We were on spring break, and there is no end to spring break, it seems. So it's, you know, I think we're just a little bit better at it right now, perhaps, than others. We know, for example, I was talking to my next door neighbor, if her family and my family stays inside for 14 days, then, you know, maybe we can have them over to dinner.
Well, it's interesting. And you talked about communicating across streets and across yards with people and having people on the porch at a safe distance. And in my neighborhood today, it was actually very sweet. There were a couple young kids having birthdays today in the neighborhood. And of course, birthday parties are out. So at 10 o'clock this morning, neighbors gathered on their front porches to sing happy birthday to the two neighborhood kids.
Yeah, we had that yesterday. We had twins turning 14, two houses down. So my daughter and I painted, which was a nice respite from sort of the daily grind of online work. We painted a giant sign for them and posted it up. It's just, you know, it's we're spending a lot of time doing long walks and waving to people, and it's an odd sense of community. But as I always am writing about, community is a lot of work, and we need to put the work into it to stay connected even while we're keeping ourselves so far apart.
And one of the things that was especially tough in your family was the realization that baseball, particularly the Red Sox, weren't going to start on time.
Yeah, you know, I wrote about that for CNN last week because I think that sports helped wake America up. I think that we were very slow to sort of recognize what was going on around the rest of the globe and understand that viruses don't really obey borders. And so I think the NBA, which I find to always sort of be out in the lead for progressive notions and common sense, I think the NBA making its announcement and then the other sports following suit, really taking that away from our daily lives, I think sort of said to people, this is the real deal. We got to do this.
We're talking with Amy Bass here on Downtown. One of the courses you teach is sports studies. Do you think when all of this is said and done and we get a return to some level of normalcy, will it change the way people watch sports or depend on sports?
Well, I think it's going to change the way we socially interact for a really long time. Even when we have, hopefully, knock on wood, you know, the antivirals that we're going to need and the vaccines that we're going to need, I wonder about large crowds, and so I wonder about the way we digest movies and sports and other events where we all come together. You know, I think of if I have to pick my top 10 favorite life moments, so many of them have to do with my time at the Olympic Games or a World Series game or just, you know, taking my daughter to spring training for the first time in Fort Myers, Florida. And I wonder, looking forward, if we're still going to see that, or if there's, you know, if somebody's going to buy four seats because they need two and they don't want anyone sitting next to them.
Yeah, I was thinking that same thing yesterday, that even when sports resume, I just have a hard time picturing 40, 50,000 people feeling comfortable gathering in a stadium.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I also wonder if we're going to be a little bit more open about the sports that we love. You know, South Korea announced that it was going to try to get basketball going again because South Korea has done a masterful job of flattening the curve, as we're starting to call it. And all over Twitter, everyone was like, okay, tell me who to root for. I'm in. South Korea's got basketball. I want to watch. And I thought, okay, so, you know, one guy posted, just tell me who's most like the Celtics, and that's my team. And I think that, you know, that's, I keep trying to find the silver linings. And if we can recognize sports that maybe aren't part of who we are in our world and other sorts of things like that, then, you know, maybe there's some good. I certainly know people are way more grateful for the work that teachers do right now because they're getting a real intimate view of what it's like inside a classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm a high school teacher full time, and we're just transitioning into what our next steps will be. But a lot of folks are doing some version of online learning. You're doing that with their students. And everything I'm hearing from teachers, and I wonder if you're getting this reaction as well, is that students are so happy, excited to have that ongoing communication with teachers.
Absolutely. I did virtual office hours today on Blackboard using it's Collaborate, which is the academic version of something like Zoom or Skype. And I had students just, you know, wandering in and showing up, not because they had a question or a problem, but they wanted to hang out in the room with me. And so, you know, we were all on headsets and we were talking and just talking about stuff. I think that connection that we have with students is so important, whether you're, you know, my daughter's in seventh grade, one of her teachers sends a morning email that has nothing to do with their work. Sometimes it's a cartoon or a riddle or a joke, but just the human contact of I'm thinking about you and you matter. And that has nothing to do with tests or assessments or learning outcomes. It just has to do with, again, being part of a community and doing the work that makes people feel like they belong.
Everybody says, well, I've got this extra time now, and I'm going to do some of those things I always planned on doing. But yet I see, and I think I've been somebody who's done it myself, hopefully that'll change soon, but I'm spending more time on social media. And it would be great if people stopped doing that and looked at some of those other pursuits. But I'm also seeing families having their kids as part of their at-home work write letters to distant relatives. And wouldn't that be remarkable if we took a step in that direction and more people wrote letters or even made actual phone calls instead of texting?
Yeah, no, we definitely have grandma time every day. My mother's 85 and a half years old, and so she is definitely isolated and staying home, and I can't go visit her because I live in New Rochelle and I'm not visiting anybody. And so, you know, absolutely, anything like that. I mean, you know, service learning projects for kids in schools right now in our district is about making cards and letters and sending them to the nursing homes because nursing homes are closed to outsiders, and what a terrible thing that is. So how can we help brighten someone's day by doing something like that? But on the flip side of that, I have no free time. Migrating curriculum online, helping my daughter with her work, my husband is working from home. it's flat out. I think I see less of them being home with them all day than I did when we were coming and going with our own schedules.
And the piece at Forward.com, a very poignant line. You said, we are a ghost ship. Are you still at that stage?
Yeah, I think that we are. I think that a ghost ship is a boat that runs without being able to see anybody, sort of this ethereal presence. And, you know, right now we know that our community is there, but not because we can necessarily see it. It isn't about who's in a restaurant or who's shopping or is it hard to find a parking space. Those things don't exist right now. So we know we're here and we're doing what we can to make sure that everyone knows that we're here, but not in the ways that we're used to doing it, and not in any way that, you know, the helicopters that for a couple of weeks were hovering over us were seeing.
Well, Amy, we wish you continued luck, good health. Keep doing what you're doing. We certainly appreciate you making time for us this afternoon. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Thanks, Rich. So great to be with you all. You're one of my favorite shows.
Amy Bass, the author of One Goal, talking with us from New Rochelle, New York. Here on the Best of Downtown. When we return, let's talk a little football. Christopher Price of the Boston Globe on the Patriots up next.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Spring thaw is the perfect breeding season for potholes. These pesky road hazards can play havoc with your tires, wheels, and front end alignment. Here are some tips from Bangor Tire Company for driving over badly damaged roads. Slow down. Apply your brakes before hitting a pothole and release them just prior to impact. Keep your tires properly inflated. And finally, if your car's steering ever starts to feel strange, have your front end alignment checked right away at Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, Bangor.
Back on the Best of Downtown, your Sunday morning with Rich Kimble, Kerry Haskell. And there is some football going on. The NFL's offseason, well, quite busy, certainly for the New England Patriots, with a lot of goings and a few arrivals. We caught up with Christopher Price of the Boston Globe to get his thoughts on what's happened and what might lie ahead for the New England Patriots.
I've been working from home pretty much the last week or so. I might be driving my wife and my son a little crazy because, you know, we've been throwing on DVDs of Super Bowl 36, Super Bowl 38, Super Bowl 39, Super Bowl 51, 53, on and on and on. But, hey, you know, we all got to get through this somehow, right?
Exactly. Whatever it takes. Well, and it's good to have a little football to talk about. We were saying earlier, really, because of the nature of the schedule, it's the only sport that is – for the most part, unaffected, as they proceed right along, at least for the time being. That may change when we get closer to camp openings, but it's been quite an offseason so far for the Patriots. Let's talk about the most recent news, the decision apparently to say goodbye to kicker Stephen Gostkowski.
Yeah, it is. It was a bit of a surprise, but given his age, given the injury history of the last year plus, and given the price tag, I think, you know, when you're talking about a team like the Patriots that needs some help when it comes to getting a little more financial flexibility, you know, it's not a crazy move, quite frankly. Look, I'm a Gostkowski apologist. I think we've talked about this over the years. He was always very, very nice to us. I mean, fans shouldn't care about this, but, I mean, he was always really nice to us. He was always culpable. You know, he always stood up and talked. Good, bad, win, loss, you know, made kick, missed kick, whatever the case may be. And I just tweeted this out too. I mean, for a guy to handle that legacy of being the guy after Adam Vinatieri, I don't think anyone did it better. You know, at least I don't think anyone could have done it better. Let me put it that way. He was gracious. He was kind. He was accommodating, and he was, you know, he leaves a pretty good legacy here in New England as the all-time leading scorer in franchise history.
So next move is to what? Get Vinatieri back?
You know,
he's still got 5 good years left in him.
Look, nothing is. You know, the minute we immediately dismiss something with this team, we know this as well as I do. It's that, you know, as soon as we say, well, that'll never happen with this team, it happens. So, look, I'm not going to, you know, even if there's 0.1%, you know, the chance of that happening, I'm not going to dismiss that out of hand. I do think that this is a team that will probably use a late-round pick on a kicker. You know, I kind of, over the course of the year, the last year, I've kind of jokingly said that Rodrigo Blankenship, the kicker from Georgia with the you know, the spectacles is would be my guy of choice if you had the choice. But there are a handful of guys out there that I could see them going towards. So, you know, or maybe they bring Nick Folk back. Who knows? But, yeah, they have to move forward at the, you know, the kicker position. The other possibility, too, and as I'm talking about this, I can't believe we haven't discussed this. Maybe you take the entire offseason and you make Jake Bailey your field goal guy, in addition to kickoffs and punts, and maybe you work with his technique and you work with his, you know, style and footwork and approach and whatever. Maybe that's the course you go. So they have some options basically at this point in the offseason.
A move that made colossal sense, I thought, was bringing Brian Hoyer back, a guy who's dependable and who certainly knows that playbook inside out.
Yeah, especially too, Rich, and this is something that, you know, you kind of touched on there before, that with the possibility that this offseason could be shortened because of coronavirus issues, that you're not going to get as much time on the field in practice, you know, with the chance that that's happening, this just makes too much sense. I'm not saying that Brian Hoyer is going to be, you know, riding on the front of a duck boat down Boylston Street next February, but under the circumstances, this is the move that makes the most sense. You know, you talked about familiarity, and you know, we talked about the shortened off season, the finances. You could fit him under the cap. You know, he knows everyone. He's, you know him to be a good teammate. You know him to be a guy who, you know, if you flip him the keys, isn't going to drive the whole thing into a ditch. It does. You know, to your point, it makes the most sense, at least at this stage. And then they'll go out, they'll draft a quarterback probably in the mid to late rounds as well. So, you know, you have those guys. You have Hoyer, Stidham, Kessler, and ostensibly one other guy, and then you kind of move forward to that group.
Do you think Bill Belichick has faith in Stidham being the guy for the long term, or is this a 1 or 2 year stopgap?
I think Jared Stidham has an excellent opportunity right now to prove that he can be a quality starter in the National Football League. He is going to get, I don't know if he'll get, you know, the majority of reps in the offseason, but look, this job now is really, in theory, his to win or lose. And so we'll find out. I think right now, as it stands, he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who might have that capability. But, you know, if he gets in there and he has a good spring and he has a good summer and, you know, looks good in the preseason, you know, maybe he is the guy. So we'll see.
We're talking with Christopher Price of the Boston Globe. Patriots, as they often do, going a little bit slowly in free agency. They've added a few new guys. Some of these people, Allen, Phillips, Bird, which ones or any of them you think that may be able to make an immediate impact this year?
I think Adrian Phillips has a chance to make an immediate impact. Now, that being said, he is more of a special teams guy than a defensive back, although he's a really good defensive back. I think he's the kind of guy who is more of an in-the-box safety, more of a bigger physical guy as opposed to a center fielder. So I think you're going to see him, I think you're going to see Phillips get a real opportunity here to be that guy who gets a chance to mix in that secondary. And like I said before, he's a great special teamer. He's a former All-Pro, and we all know how Bill loves those guys. So I could envision a scenario where Adrian Phillips becomes kind of a Nate Ebner-ish 2.0 type of guy, mm-hmm. although with the possibility to chip in more on defense. I know that makes people nuts that, hey, he's a special teams guy, especially when you're in the middle of an offseason, you know, where you've lost, you know, your starting quarterback and you need, you know, guys on the offensive side of the ball. But that's who he is, and I think that Phillips has a chance to make a real impact in 2020 for this team.
So what are the biggest positional needs for the team right now going forward?
The biggest positional needs right now for this team still remain on the offensive side of the ball, and they also have to get a little bit younger at defense. You still need some depth at the offensive skill position guys, specifically tight end and wide receiver. And you need to get a little bit younger at safety. Now, we just talked about Adrian Phillips, but you know, you have a group of guys at safety, Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung. Those guys are, you know, still playing at a very high level, but they're getting a little bit long in the tooth. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see the Patriots use a pick in the first one, two, three rounds on a safety. And then you need to be able to get a game changer on offense. You need, you know, specifically, again, at wide receiver or tight end. I don't know if you can go into the season with, say, Jared Stidham as your quarterback and N'Keal Harry, Mohamed Sanu as, you know, two of your options. I think you need to, you know, reinforce the wide receiver position a little bit, and you need to get a, you know, you need to get a tight end, a guy who can go out and catch the ball, do a little blocking, and, you know, do a little bit of everything. So I guess the short answer to your question is you need to get more on offense, but there are multiple spots that need to be addressed going forward.
As you look around the NFC East, has anybody other than perhaps Buffalo moved ahead of the Patriots on the divisional depth chart?
No. I think this division right now, I mean, if they kick the ball off tomorrow, this division comes down to Buffalo and the Patriots. I really like what Buffalo's done this offseason. Mm. I really do. And it's almost like they're in a win now mode. And I think that they may have the right to think that, because they've played well enough over the last couple of years to make you think, well, they've put together a really solid foundation, both on the coaching staff, on the field, off the field. They've given themselves a little bit of financial wiggle room that they can go into 2020 as a serious challenger to the Patriots. Now, whether all that, you know, pans out, obviously health and personnel decisions, you know, are going to be huge. But I think right now, really, you know, to your point, it's the Patriots and the Bills and then everyone else when you're talking about the AFC East.
And what do you think we'll see from Tom Brady as a member of the Buccaneers this year?
I think he'll have some success on offense. I don't think that, you know, this is the great debate. Is Belichick or Brady going to win a Super Bowl first, you know, now that they've separated? I don't think that the Buccaneers have done quite enough to be able to be a team that you can take seriously as a Super Bowl contender right now. But I think that Tom Brady offensively will do well on that team, you know, with Goodwin and or Godwin and Evans and Howard. And, you know, this is that's a team that put up an awful lot of points last year with James Winston at quarterback. I think they were third in the league in total points. You know, Winston's mistakes aside, they did a lot of good things on the offensive side of the ball. And I think having a guy like Brady there, I think we'll be able to take them to the next level, at the very least get them to the postseason. The one thing that I'm going to be really interested in seeing is how Brady's overall offensive velocity, which is more of the short and intermediate passing game right now, meshes with Bruce Arians' attack, which is more of a downfield look. So I think they'll be able to get on the same page, but it's going to be fun to watch them try.
Well, we look forward to talking more about it as we move along here on hopefully what will be a reasonably normal schedule when we come out of this odd time we're in right now. Christopher, we appreciate you making time for us this afternoon. Be well, stay safe, and we'll check in again soon.
You too, Rich. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Christopher Price of the Boston Globe talking Patriots with us here on Downtown. When we come back, producer Steve Burns tells us about a brand new documentary, Pompeii Disaster Street. That's next on Z62 Retro Radio.
Hi, this is Eric.
And Christine.
From the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, inviting you to come experience everything that we have to offer.
Sure, you already know we have the most expertly cultivated selection of fine wine, craft beer, meads, and ciders in the region.
But have you tried our wide variety of cheeses, cured meats, and gourmet goods? Our exclusive line of Tavolo specialty oils and vinegars, now featuring apple cider vinegar and organic sunflower seed oil made right here in Maine? Our olive bar, and don't miss the crusty baguettes.
We can put it all together in a brilliant platter or gift basket packaged with locally made wine and cheese accessories.
And while our selection is impressive, most importantly, know that we offer the service and knowledge to help anyone from the seasoned buyer to the nervous newcomer.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, family owned and operated since 2000, is located at 86 Hammond Street in the heart of downtown Bangor.
Come in, let us cater to you, and discover why we say drink, eat, live better.
What makes a community thrive? The people who live in it. When you use your First National Bank Visa debit card at participating local businesses, you save on everyday purchases while supporting the people who work day in and day out to make your town a vibrant, unique community. Receive cash back on purchases and support the local businesses that make our communities thrive. Bank local, buy local. Learn more at dreamfirstrewards.com. First National Bank. Dream first because you can. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Dr. Jacob Valley of Bangor Dental Associates explains how they handle patients who might be anxious about a dental visit.
Dentistry's come a long way in the last years, and people come in who haven't been in a while and are shocked at the technology and how much smoother everything operates. If you come in and you haven't been in a while, just at the first appointment, you'll be amazed at how comfortable you'll be and how we make you feel really special and at home at this place.
For more information about Dr. Michelle Speckhart, Dr. Jacob Valley, and the team at Bangor Dental Associates, call them at 207-947-7503. We're back on the best of downtown for your Sunday morning. Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell with you here on Z62 Retro Radio, brought to you by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Now I don't know where I'm gonna go when the volcano blows.
Too soon, Carrie, to make Pompeii jokes?
I don't think anybody from Pompeii is gonna mind.
No, I don't either. Our next guest is an Emmy Award-winning producer who's got a brand new documentary on Curiosity Stream called Pompeii: Disaster Street. We talked with Steve Burns about the making of this new doc. Quite an ambitious project. I understand it took more than 2 years to put all this together.
Yeah, it was 2 years in the making, 8 months alone in negotiation to get these exclusive rights. And then, you know, we had crews there filming over that whole period for 100 days just to capture each discovery that the archaeologists made.
And I think people would be surprised to learn that the site has been largely neglected for a number of years. Why was that?
Well, I think maintenance was expensive, and two-thirds of Pompeii has been excavated, some of it a couple centuries ago and some of it the last century. But, you know, they do a good job on what they're doing, but when the Gladiators Training Center wall fell... they realized they had to go into the unexcavated areas, which were saturated with water and were funneling water into the excavated portions. So that's why they jumped into high gear and started this rescue archaeology to uncover this brand new area and save the existing area that's been open to the public.
Well, that's one of the things that's going to be so fascinating to watch, is seeing the archaeologists sift through the layers of stone and ash. Obviously, a very time-intensive process, because you have to be very careful not to destroy anything. So how much of this are we going to see? I understand it's about 8 months of work that we'll witness.
Well, no, you'll witness a year and a half of work. We had a local crew that would come in with the larger crew later, but they would come in whenever there was a discovery. They were working to make sure that the archaeologists who became friends with them would call them, and they'd show up on location. So they were there when they found the skeleton of a man who jumped from the balcony thinking he could escape. They were there when the archaeologists found 10 skeletons in this one room. But they were there every day when you'd see kitchen items and tradesmen's goods, amphora, pottery, glass bowls coming out of the ground. And, oh my gosh, the incredible paintings, these frescoes on the walls and mosaics on the floors. They were so colorful because they were all preserved by the ash and pumice stones.
And it sounds, too, that some of the things that were the most impactful were seeing those items of everyday life, that even 2,000 years later, we can relate to some of those items.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, the one that floored me was a pair of tweezers, and these wonderful young archaeologists were saying, "It's just like ours. It's just like ours." I don't know Italian, but you could, at least in that instance, as they played with them with their hands, you could see, oh my gosh, they're enjoying this as much as I am and as much as the audience will, really.
We're talking with executive producer Steve Burns, Pompeii Disaster Street, available starting today on Curiosity Stream. And one of the other things that you've done is to recreate the final hours of the people of Pompeii. Can you talk a little bit about how you put all of that together?
Well, first of all, we have a sort of an unprecedented look at what was happening hour by hour. And, you know, we've all seen documentaries where you see a generic flow of hot gas and ash coming toward the towns. But this, for Pompeii, they now know that it started at midday. The great plume out of the nearby mountain that was actually a volcano started raining down pumice stones. These are light stones blasted out of the volcano. They were raining back on this resort town. So they were hitting people in the streets and causing deafening sounds on the tile roofs, and they started filling up the streets. And it was building up at about 4 inches per hour, the archaeologists tell us. And those that didn't escape early were, in a way, trapped, because it's difficult to walk over these stones when they build up, and the wagons and carts certainly can't pull through it. And it got to the point where people couldn't open their doors anymore. They were trapped by the weight of the stones, and so they had to endure day and night. Then at 6 in the morning, the volcano, there was a slight lull, and I think some people, I'll tell you a story of one man jumped from a balcony thinking he could make it out at that point, but he was caught by this pyroclastic flow, which is a wave of hot rock and ash coming down 400 degrees, 150 miles an hour, and it just collapsed walls and roofs and buried the city under 18 feet of pumice and ash. Sadly, the man who was the bar owner who jumped from his second balcony, not a daring feat because the streets were full of pumice. He probably only jumped 2 or 3 feet, but he was caught by that same 150 mile an hour searing wave of hot ash and rocks.
As you did your research and learned more and more about Pompeii, what were some of the most surprising discoveries?
Well, I guess a couple. First was that everybody always thought that this event happened in August 79 AD. Pliny the Elder had written that. But they actually found graffiti from some of the repairmen, and now they think it happened a month later. Hmm. Also, this was so emotional and personal, they would find things like children's scratching their ABCs in the doorways of houses, and they would find what were embers in outdoor heating, heating stoves, so that they knew what people were hanging out in that very house during trapped in that house during the eruption. What else? And they, in addition to all those terrific finds that I talked about, they also use DNA in a way that established a couple things. For instance, the rich people were the ones with lead in their bones because they were drinking out of lead pipes.
Right.
The slaves and others didn't have the benefit of those lead pipes, so they were, in a way, a little bit better off for it. They discovered that this town was under repair. The sewage system was being repaired. The cobblestones were being replaced in this city when this event happened. So lots of brand new things in this brand new area that's been excavated.
Well, and as we go through a challenging time, not just here in America, but all over the world, yeah. I think this is going to be a very powerful and poignant reminder of the connection we all have to humanity. And it's an incredibly timely story. We look forward to seeing it. Pompeii Disaster Street, available on Curiosity Stream. Steve, thank you so much for being with us, and congratulations on your wonderful work on this project.
Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it.
Executive producer Steve Burns talking about the new documentary Pompeii Disaster Street, available on Curiosity Stream. We'll take a quick break and come back and talk with actor and Beatles blogger Mark Cartier. It's the Best of Downtown here on Z62.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind. Identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
As the public health situation continues, Central Street Farmhouse, Greater Bangor's leader for do-it-yourselfers since 2010, is now taking orders online or by phone only for all your ingredients, supplies, and emotional support to make your own beer, cider, mead, wine, and more. Have it shipped or stop out front for curbside pickup. Social distancing is a great time to discover or rediscover home brewing. Call or place your order online. Follow Central Street Farmhouse on Facebook and Instagram. Call 942-4454 or shop online at centralstreetfarmhouse.com.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Hi, this is Mike Toole of ClearPoint Capital in Bangor. I've been an investment advisor for over 25 years. Our firm is local, independent, and now with the addition of my two children, John and Jillian, we're truly a family business. At ClearPoint Capital, we help our clients grow and protect their investments to help meet their goals. Why not see what our team can do for you? Give us a call today at 307-7718 to schedule a free consultation. ClearPoint Capital, our family helping yours.
We're back on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell here with you. Our next guest on Downtown is an actor, Beatles blogger, and a great friend of the show. Mark Cartier joined us to talk about his work on a new movie that's available streaming on Amazon Prime called Blow the Man Down. Here's Mark Cartier on Downtown.
Hi, Rich. How you doing?
Well, doing pretty well. How are you in these interesting times?
Oh, well, we're hunkered down. You know, we're going to have we're down here in Massachusetts, and we're going to have a stay-in-place order starting tomorrow down here. So,
have you lost a lot of work so far because of this?
A little bit. I think I was supposed to be doing some extra work on a film today, as a matter of fact, but that's not happening anytime in the foreseeable future.
Well, and people forget that folks in the arts community and actors like yourself often go from one job to the next. And if something happens to mess that up, you don't get income for that period.
Exactly. So it's not that we're not used to this, but it's going to be a little bit more prolonged than usual, I think.
Yeah, well, we hope we can straighten it out sooner rather than later. Hey, had a chance to see a brand new movie that you were a part of last night and absolutely loved Blow the Man Down.
It's a real fun movie. We shot it about 2 years ago up in Harpswell, Maine. I'm not sure if you know where that is.
I do, yeah.
Brunswick. Just below Brunswick, those couple peninsulas that shoot down there. Gorgeous, gorgeous area.
Yeah, it's a beautiful scenery in the film. It's, I guess I would call it a black comedy, some very funny moments. It's dark at times, but wonderfully shot and edited and terrific acting as well. And you play essentially a Greek, part of a Greek chorus of singing fishermen.
Right. Initially, I went up there really on a whim. I mean, I saw that the local New England SAG office, Screen Actors Guild, said that there was a film shooting up in Maine, and they were looking for local hires. And I work at the theater at Monmouth, which is about 25 miles from Brunswick, which is where they were having the auditions. And I said, yeah, I got places I could stay up there, people I could stay with, so why not? So I went up there. And I read for three different roles, none of which I was really right for. So it wasn't happening. And then about a month and a half later, they called me up and they said, can you sing? And I said, yeah, a little bit. So they said, we have these singing fishermen. Can you be here tomorrow? And I said, okay. And that's how that happened. It was that quick.
Well, it's a wonderful film and a great cast with June Squibb, who's awesome, Margot Martindale, and a friend of our show, Annette O'Toole. And I sent Annette a message last night and said, love the movie, and thought you nailed that Maine accent. And she got right back to me and said, oh, my God, Rich, thank you. I was so worried about the accent. And then she also added, fun fact, June Squibb loves Scandinavian mysteries. That's good to know.
An obscure fun fact, yes.
Yeah. Now, did you get to work with any of the ladies, or did you shoot your parts independently of them?
Our stuff was pretty much independent. There was the first day of shooting actually took place in the little dive bar, which is right by the Cribstone Bridge on Bailey Island. I don't know if you know where that is.
I do, yeah.
And we were shooting in the little dive bar where Margot was in there, and the younger sister, and we actually there was a karaoke set up in there, and we shot a karaoke sequence with her and the singing fisherman.
Oh man,
it didn't make it into the film.
Well, that's too bad because that sounds great.
It was a riot. It was very funny. We were dancing and singing to a Madonna song. I forget which one. Well, and I guess they also had Margot at one point doing karaoke, singing My Way, which is perfect for her character.
Well, the movie's terrific. A Blow the Man Down is available streaming right now on Amazon Prime. And yeah, that's one of the many things, and there are downsides too, but one of the great benefits of streaming video in this day and age is that you get a chance up here where we don't always get every release that plays in the smaller theaters and the art house theaters, but we do get a chance to see them, and it was wonderful to be able to watch it.
Yeah, you know, the film, it's hard enough to get a film made nowadays, and then it's hard to get into a festival, and this made it into the Tribeca Festival a year ago in New York City. And once you're in a festival, then you try to get a distributor. And they never really got a distributor that would get it into theaters, into even small art houses. But they were lucky enough to get Amazon. And this was the release date, so it timed out perfectly for this situation, really. It was like a major release this week.
Mm. I read, too, that one of the guys who I guess is the lead of the singing fisherman is known for this, for his shanties.
Yes, he specializes in that, and he actually was not part of the film when we initially shot it. We were singing. They weren't going to use our voices at all. We were singing to a pre-recorded track. And after they looked at that footage, they says it just doesn't look right. We want someone who's really singing that style. And they found this guy, and we actually shot with him about 8 or 9 months after the film was originally shot.
Huh.
That's when they brought him in to shoot his sequences, and he's got a lovely voice.
Well, check it out on Amazon Prime, Blow the Man Down. Mark Cartier with us here on Downtown. We have to talk Beatles when we have you on, Mark. And I'm so excited to see that you've started posting again on your Beatles blog.
Yeah, I wound up doing a lot of theater last year, which is great because I won't get to do much this year. And so I wasn't blogging as often as I usually do. I think I took about an 8 or 10 month break from doing that. But I've gotten back into my alphabetical list, and next up will be George's It's All Too Much. I'll be working on that in the next few days.
Can't wait to read that. And what's next in terms of reissues? Are we down to Let It Be? Is that about all that's left?
Yeah, that's it. That's the last 50th anniversary we're going to have is the final album, Let It Be, which is not the best, but it's very interesting to talk about because the situations that created it was so, it took more than a year for it to come out. It was really quite a mess, the whole situation around that time. But what I'm more interested in is Peter Jackson working on the Let It Be film. Which supposedly is going to come out in the fall, I think September. He went back and he got all the footage from the Let It Be film, and he's found lots of stuff that they didn't use, and he's putting together a much better film, which I think is going to be fascinating to see.
Did you see the Ronnie Howard documentary?
Oh, yes, that was great. That was really great. I think they did a great job on that.
And I love it. And, you know, it's hard to believe that after all these years later, you can still find things that no one has seen or heard before because no band has ever been written about and talked about more than the Beatles. And so for Ron Howard and then for Peter Jackson to find things that most of us haven't seen is just incredibly exciting.
Yeah, it's great. Well, you know, the Let It Be sessions, which are really or initially called the Get Back sessions, Most of the bootleg material for the Beatles, at least more than half of it, is from those sessions because they just recorded for hours and hours and hours. And same for the film. They filmed them the whole time they were there. And it's shot on, I believe, 16 millimeter. It looks really grainy. It looks really old. But I bet Peter Jackson can do to that what he did to the World War One footage and like make that look fantastic.
And, of course, there's already been sort of a new version, a different version of Let It Be that I think McCartney spearheaded, taking away some of that Phil Spector production.
Right. That was Let It Be Naked that came up back in 2003. It's already that old. 2003. And it's good. There's some good stuff in it, but it's still, we never get the original Get Back album that Glyn Johns put together for the Beatles.
That's right, yeah.
Which was really raw. You can find it as a bootleg. It's fascinating to listen to. They don't even finish one of the songs. What is it? I've Got a Feeling. They get to the part where John and Paul sing their parts simultaneously, and it breaks down. They don't even finish the song on that album.
Did you have a chance to read Peter Asher's book?
I've taken a look at it. Yeah. I remember your interview with him from, and it was fascinating. He's a great guy, and he was involved with so much. James Taylor, he brought James Taylor into Apple Records and all of that stuff. Just great stuff.
I love the story he told that. He heard Help while they were still working on it, and he was going out. I think he told us it was a Dick Clark tour with a lot of the other 60s bands, and they're hanging out at the hotel one night, and he said, hey, I can play the next Beatles single, and he learned Help, and he played, and they're like, yeah, sure, that's the next Beatles single, and then about a week later, they released it, and he said, I was very proud of myself, and then I was a little bit embarrassed.
Good having some inside knowledge in some situations.
Oh, yeah. I'd do the same thing if I was in that position. You'd kidding me? I'd be telling everybody that.
Yeah, because Paul McCartney was dating his sister, Jane Asher, who was a famous actress. And so he had firsthand knowledge of everything that was going on.
And was staying right in the house or right down the hall from Peter.
Yeah. Paul was living there for a few years.
You know, that's the other thing, too, because I know, you know, McCartney's out and been touring again, and Ringo was supposed to be coming here to Bangor in June. That's still on for now, but especially with some of these tremendous artists that are a little bit older, you know, you hate the idea of losing out potentially on a whole season of them touring.
It's a shame. It's a shame. But, you know, just in this one week that we've been in this situation, it's been really great to see how many artists and actors and musicians and so forth have been just going online and posting something.
Yes.
Just to get something out there, you know, just to sing for, you know, Neil Diamond doing his bit.
That was great.
Hysterical. It was great. And I think more and more of them, the longer this situation goes on, are going to reach out that way and be in touch with the fans and give us some, you know, some hope, something to look forward to, which we need right now.
Absolutely. That's what artists do. We appreciate them all and appreciate you as always, Mark. The new movie, Mark is in. It's terrific. Blow the Man Down, available on Amazon Prime. Mark Cartier, thank you so much for being with us as always. Be well, stay safe down there, and we'll check in with you again, hopefully summertime, when hopefully you're up here working at theater at Monmouth again.
We'll see if it happens.
All right.
Thanks for having me. It's always a blast, and best to your family, Rich.
Our friend Mark Cartier talking Beatles and the new movie Blow the Man Down, available for streaming on Amazon Prime Video. Our thanks to Mark, Amy Bass, Christopher Price of the Boston Globe, and Steve Burns, producer of the new documentary Pompeii, Disaster Street. Thanks to you for joining us on your Sunday morning as well. We'll be here tomorrow afternoon. Got a brand spanking new program for you with Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Author Elena Horwich talks about her book, Meal and a Spiel, How to Be a Badass in the Kitchen. Plus, actress Edwina Findlay Dickerson of The Wire and Tremé, and Alan Adams of The Main Edge. That's all tomorrow at 4 here on Z62 Retro Radio. Enjoy your social distancing today, Carrie.
I will be doing that. I did see an interesting thing. I don't know if you saw this past week. A lot of experts and scientists are saying they want to drop social distancing and replace it with physical distancing to let people know you can still stay in touch with each other.
Yes.
You don't have to be completely isolated. Just stay physically separated from people.
Yes. Although, you know, some of us prefer the social distancing. No, I'm not a hermit. I'm not a recluse. Not yet, but give me a couple more months of this and I might grow to like it. You never know. Well, we talked Beatles with Mark Cartier, so let's listen to a little more from the Let It Be album here on The Best of Downton. I hope the rest of your Sunday goes well. Stay safe, keep your distance, wash your hands. We'll see you tomorrow at 4 here on Downton.
My baby says you're traveling on the one after 909. Move over, honey, I'm traveling on that line. I said, move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Said you're traveling on the one after 909. I begged her not to go, and I begged her on my bended knee. You're only fooling around with me. I said, move over once, move over twice. Oh, baby, don't be cold as ice. Said you're driving on the one after 909. Pick up my bags, run to the station. Railman says you got the wrong location. Pick up my bags, run right home. Then I find I got the number wrong. Well, on the one after 909. Move over, honey, I'm traveling on that line. Move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Said you're traveling on the one after 909. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Said you're traveling on the one after 90. She said you're traveling on the one after 90.